Welcome to the Real Estate Launchpad Podcast, where we help new and aspiring investors take off. I'm Greg Kirzner, and today we dive into another episode of the Launchpad series, First Deal Stories with Aku Kumar. Our First Deal Stories podcasts are where we break down real investors' first property deals, their challenges, the wins, and the lessons that they learn so that you can take action with confidence. If you've ever been dreaming about investing in real estate but haven't taken the first step yet, you're in the right place. And today I am here with a very special guest, a young man that I have had the privilege to get to know over the last couple of months and to also personally coach. So there's that through his process and the journey that he went through to buy his first investment property. I titled this episode, Real Estate Investing Isn't Rocket Science, or Is It? And I say that tongue in cheek because you'll get to explain to me what all of that means. Welcome, Aku. I appreciate you being here. I see you are in your first investment property right now, which is gives me chills. I'm excited about that. But that is fantastic. With no further ado, let me ask you just in general a little bit about your background, because you're a very interesting young man, amazing hobbies. You're extremely busy and also extremely ambitious, which is one of the characteristics that really attracted me to you. Give me a little background on who you are, what you've been doing, where you are, that kind of stuff, and then we'll dive in.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks so much, Greg, for having me on the podcast. And like you said, it's just been great getting to know you over the past couple of months. And yeah, man, your help has been the game changer for me.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Aku Kumar. I'm originally from a little town called Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, right next to the capital, Harrisburg. And if you knew what the capital of Pennsylvania was, then you get bonus points because not many people do. I was fortunate enough to go to Texas A&M on a full scholarship for aerospace engineering, which is why Greg mentioned the rocket science. And I'm still a student there. I'm a master's student. And it's just been, it's been a pretty wild ride the last 4 years, both within real estate and out of it. Some highlights are, I got my pilot's license. I climbed Denali, one of the 50 youngest to climb Denali, which is the tallest mountain in North America. I started my own company, not a real estate company, an aerospace company. And we actually have a contract with Southwest Airlines. And yeah, it's just been a fantastic journey so far. And I can't wait to see where I go next.
Well, when people are listening here, and I'm listening too, and I'm a lot older than you, I think about it and I'm like, wow, what have I done with my life? When you're in your early 20s and you already have a company, you have a client like Southwest Airlines, which is a publicly traded company. You know how to fly an airplane, and you've also been able to cut out enough time in your very busy schedule as a graduate student in a very complicated and difficult degree program to dive into investing in real estate. You're obviously a very ambitious guy, and I think that's one of the things that tends to trend with a lot of investors that early on in life focus on how they're going to build wealth and passive income for their future, is to start thinking about it early and be ambitious about it. So congratulations on that. Now, I know with all the other activities that you have, and obviously with your career track, you're probably well set to make a lot of money if that's your focus and to be successful in your career. But why did you want to dive in and invest in real estate in the first place? What got you interested?
That's a fantastic question. And I'll start off by saying that, like most people, I was definitely motivated by the money a little bit. However, I would say that in all these things I do, I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. I'm the type of guy that if I want to learn about something like real estate, like flying planes, like whatever, I can't read a textbook. It just doesn't work well for me. I need to go and do the thing, right? And I'm not afraid to fail. And I failed quite a bit throughout the real estate journey, throughout all these other things I've done. And so I think my interest first started maybe in high school. I had this great mentor. He was a family friend of ours who had been a pharmacist. He started his own pharmacy, sold it for like $3 million in profit, and then just started doing stock trading and real estate investing. And while I was in high school, I had the chance to just sit down with him like two times a week. He was very gracious to give so much time to me and just go through, hey, here's how you get started. And while at that point, I don't think I had the confidence to really get started, it just planted a seed of, this is such an interesting field. My mentor has been so successful because of it. And it honestly doesn't seem that hard compared to engineering and other things I've done. And why not try it? And I was thinking about it throughout my first couple of years of college. Didn't have enough time until my fourth year of college. I had a lot less classes, had a lot more, not necessarily free time, but time to devote to other hobbies. And that's why I was like, you know, when am I going to get this chance again? When I don't have that many responsibilities, I have the time. And I was fortunate enough to, like I mentioned, get the full scholarship. So I had some extra money too to put into real estate. So it just stars aligned and I couldn't pass up the opportunity this past year.
Well, that's great. And as you're talking about that, one of the things that went through my mind was is that a lot of investors, what I call new and aspiring investors, and you fit that category. We see so many people that have that dream, that desire, the transformational experience. Oh, I want to have these things in the future, but they're not sure how to get started, or they deal with all of the typical things, the self-doubt. I don't have enough experience. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. And I think that derails the vast majority of people. And one of the reasons why I do what I do is to get people over that sort of self-imposed barrier to take action. And one of the things you mentioned that really resonated with me is that you were willing to fail, and failure wasn't something that was catastrophic for you. And I think that's huge, because I think a lot of people play it way too safe, especially early in life. And the other thing that you mentioned that was really important was that when you looked at this and you said, gosh, I mean, compared to aerospace engineering or learning how to fly a plane, real estate investing doesn't seem that difficult. And the reality is that it isn't that difficult, and that we inherently know a lot about real estate already growing up in homes or townhomes or wherever. So some of it is natural, but there is a lot of stuff that goes into it, and there is stuff that can go wrong and cause problems. That being said, that's what I really got out of that. All right. So for me, I know what a lot of people face, but for you specifically, were there any fears, any doubts that you had about doing this, or constraints that you felt like were hard to get through to actually take action?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, while I'm saying it didn't seem that difficult, now that I can see it in retrospect, obviously before I got started, it did seem very difficult. Not in the sense of I knew that I could, whatever challenge real estate threw my way when I started my first deal, which it threw a lot of challenges for sure, I knew I could handle it. It just seemed there was so much involved. There was getting the loan, there was finding the property, there was rehab, there was, you know, all the getting a tenant, marketing, all these different things that I just feel like, how could I myself do it? It's not like I was really working with anyone at the time. So it was very difficult for me to see where the first step was, honestly. I could see all these different pathways, but it's like, how do I just take that first step? And honestly, what was the most helpful for me was getting in touch with you, Greg, because you helped show me the first step. And while you're an exceptional example of a mentor, I think probably my recommendation for anyone who's getting started is get a mentor. Right. Get explained. And I can still remember one of our first meetings. I straight up explained, here's what I want. I want to buy a property. I want to do this and do it right. And you were more than willing to help me through that. I'll say I put in the work, of course, which led you to trust me that you wanted to put the work in me. So it's a symbiotic relationship. And honestly, I felt like all my kind of fears slowly they turned into questions to you. And then the answers brought them out of my system until I got to that point where it was like, what reason do I have for not doing this? And when I realized that, it was like, just do it. I think that's like the final stop for a lot of people is, but there's some reason why I shouldn't do this. And when I realized that I was telling myself that there is a reason, but I can't name that reason, I had not all the knowledge, but enough knowledge. I had the money, I had the time. When I realized that, I was like, okay, I'm not going to be like everyone else. I'm just going to go for it. And I'm so glad I did, to be honest.
Yeah. And as I'm listening to that as well, it resonates with me too, because I think that what you mentioned that's extremely important is that it's a lot easier to have somebody that's been a little further down the road and has seen that and had that experience, not only for the specific information, but also for the confidence. Okay, hey, when you run into a roadblock, it's not going to be devastating. And there's somebody there that you can talk about it with and puzzle through it. So mentoring, I think, is an extremely important thing. And again, why I'm doing what I'm doing, which is that I understand to get people from zero to one or one to many, there's a lot of heavy lift that comes mentally and not so much on the real estate investing side. The nuts and bolts of it can be taught, but the kind of help and symbiotic relationship of moving forward. And then you also mentioned something I think is important, which is at some point, once you're pushed out of the nest, you can fly and you get that confidence and you're like, ah, okay, this is not going to end badly. And I got my hands on this and I can handle whatever might come. And so those are really important points. And I'm glad you mentioned that. So other than connecting up with me, or maybe before that, what, if any, educational stuff or other kinds of things did you do to try to get geared up to do this? And I want to understand that process, because I think a lot of people who have this desire are in the same boat as you, which is, okay, where do I start? How do I find this out? What was your journey to the point where it led you to meet up with me or to actually take more specific action?
Yeah, totally. I'll just focus on last year when I really got started. Before that, honestly, every so often I looked at blogs or I talked to my family friend, but that to me didn't really count. I probably really got started last July when I started my master's degree. And like I mentioned, I got a little bit more time, less classes. And I had been trying this new thing for me. This is not a new thing in general, but for me, which was instead of spending 10 hours one day trying to do everything, like trying to learn about real estate from end to end and then just get burned out, which is what I always used to do, I decided it'd probably be more reasonable and more sustainable if I just did an hour a day of something. And again, I didn't necessarily know what that something was. And I just figured maybe the best way to learn about it is just take a realtor course. And so that's what I did. I just signed up for a realtor course. Not that I had any intention of being a realtor or a real estate agent, but I just figured like you probably would have to learn something about real estate by taking this course. So I'm just going to do an hour of it each day. And that's what I did for close to 2 months. Is I signed up for the, I originally was planning to invest in Atlanta. So I joined the Georgia real estate course, did an hour each day, and I honestly learned a lot. But probably more importantly than what I learned, it just kept my interest in it. It kept me searching for more. It kept me asking questions. I know that if I had just done like 10 hours one day each week, I would have gotten either so burned out or so bored really fast. Instead, by just getting started in something and then learning, okay, this probably isn't exactly what I need to be an investor. To be a real estate agent, obviously, but to be an investor, you don't need like all the things about everything. I realized, okay, here's the stuff that I can use, and then I'll pursue that. So I would say that was probably the first foray into real estate, like seriously. Serious foray was just doing that realtor course. And then I got on Bigger Pockets podcast. Right. And I started listening to that when I was at the gym every night, again, about an hour and a half, which helped a lot. It wasn't necessarily great as a beginner investor because they talk about some pretty complex stuff sometimes, but just to listen to the terms, to search them up on Investopedia later, like it kept my interest alive and kept me searching for more knowledge, which eventually led me to put my first post on Bigger Pockets on the blog, which is how you reached out to me after that. And a number of other people reached out to me, and that's when I put myself out there to say, hey, I'm ready for this. I want to learn. I don't know everything, but I've been doing something at least.
Yeah, no, I think, again, that your journey is a lot of other people who we're motivated by a stick, the carrot or the stick, right? And so a lot of times I don't want to do something that might embarrass me. So I'm going to try and learn this stuff on my own, or at least try to understand it. So when I open my mouth, I don't sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. But then I think at some point you get to the point where you tip to where, okay, now I do know enough to where I can reach out to other people and I can start to communicate and actually benefit. And you mentioned something else, and I'll just hit this real quick because it's one of the things that I love about how people learn is this. You mentioned that you're not ideally suited for what's called total immersion. A lot of people do. It's a Tony Robbins thing that you get in and you just absolutely totally immerse yourself on something so that you become so enamored with it, understanding of it, and you're not distracted. I'm also like you in that I can't sit there for 8 hours, 10 hours and do things like that. I start to go crazy. And I think that I learned a lot of what you said as well earlier in life, where I like to do music as well. And I took a course on how to use a certain software and how to create music. And what the guy told me, which really resonated more than anything else, was he said, the key is consistency. The key is to, even if it's just 5 minutes a day, to do it. Because if you build that habit, that mental muscle, even if you're just going down there and turning it on and turning it back off, it matters. It makes a difference because you don't lose momentum and you build that sort of mental muscle that allows you to get going and not get distracted. Because the thing about real estate investing that I will say before we move on, and I want to talk so much about the project and everything too, but I think this part's important, is that if you don't focus on it every day, it is extremely easy to let that energy go, because you're not going to die if you don't buy a property today or tomorrow or next week or next year. I use it the reverse example of smoking. People smoke, it's a bad habit, but it isn't going to kill you today. It will kill you eventually if you continue to do it. And the same thing with real estate in reverse, which is you want to build wealth for the future. It's hard to worry about, if I don't do this today, life's going to end. And so people put things off. They assume, okay, I can do it next year, next week, whenever. But being able to build that mental muscle, take action and kind of move forward is how we get things done. And then you're like, okay, now we have to hold you back. All right, so let me pivot a little bit because I want to talk about this first deal. And let's go through essentially how you found the first property. And I know, but for everybody that's listening, go through that.
Yeah, I'll just start off with maybe the wrong way to do it. Maybe not necessarily the wrong way, because I'm glad I did it. I was looking for, when I first started out, I was like, I'm ready to do this. I'm going to find a property. It's going to be the perfect property. And immediately I just jumped in and said, I'm going to do this nationwide search in the US to find the perfect property. And I didn't really have a very narrow, first of all, I didn't know really what I was looking for to begin with. I just thought, hey, when I see one that's perfect, I'll know. And then second, it just took so much time to look at thousands of properties across the US that it started wearing away at my energy. I was like, is real estate really worth it? And that's when I had some conversations with you. I read some blogs where it's like, what's more important than finding the perfect property? Because any property can be perfect, right? With the right price, with the right this, with the right that. It's about just finding a market that you're reasonably able to know, right? And that you can just become a part of in some sort of way. And then just look day after day, because stuff will pop up, right? It's not just like a static, here's all the properties on one day and that's all the properties forever. No, it's a time thing too, right? Next week, the property might be there, right? And you'll never know if you only look today. And that's what someone said is, why spend 10 hours looking at all the properties in the US and just focus on one area that you think, maybe it's not, maybe it is, could work. And then you'll get a good sense of, will it work or not? So like I mentioned earlier, I recently looked at Atlanta, but then I realized I don't know Atlanta super well. My brother lives there, but he just moved there and I don't live there. And then I just figured Texas, where I live, is one of the fastest growing states in the United States. Like, why am I being an idiot and looking at Georgia? And even though Georgia's great, I have Houston, Dallas, and Austin in my backyard, essentially. They're within 3 hours of me each. And basically I said, okay, I'm just going to pick one of the cities. I flipped a coin, honestly, and was like, Houston, let's do it. So I started looking at Houston, and Houston's a big place, right? And I thought the same way that it really helped me to just hear someone's perspective, like your own, when getting started, it was like probably the best way to find out the best market in the Houston market, the best sub-market, is just talk to a real estate agent, right, who lives there. And so that's what I did. I reached out to a couple of real estate agents, one specific guy I really vibe with. We had a conversation, and basically from the next day on, he started sending me properties on the MLS.
Right.
And he told me, here are the neighborhoods that you want to look at. Specifically, it was Katy, The Heights, and one more neighborhood in downtown Houston. And so that really narrowed down my search and made it actually possible for me as a student who's super busy to look at properties over time. It only took 20 minutes out of my day to just quickly, okay, maybe at first it took a little bit longer, but then as I got better and better, I could easily pass through them and see, is this even worth pursuing? Right. And so that really helped. And then one day, man, I was looking through Katy, which is about 30 minutes west of downtown Houston. I was looking at the kind of Katy search, and I found this property that I immediately was like, I'm not sure if this is amazing, but just from my limited knowledge, this could probably be pretty good. I sent it to you, Greg, and I sent it to the real estate agent. They're like, yeah, let's keep looking at it. And so that's how I got started with finding the property. It was just going from a lot to a little, but by keeping it a little, I think that what I had to realize is you're only going to buy one property, right? So it doesn't matter if your search is 10,000 properties or 10 properties, you're only going to buy one. Having more just gives you more of a probability, a chance to get a good one. But in the end, you're just going to buy one. So if that 10 group of 10 properties, you know, really well, you know what would be a good deal in that group of 10 properties, and that one property shows up, you can just get on it. Versus when it's 10,000, it's so hard to know what's good here, who knows. So yeah, that's how I got started with it.
Yeah. And so I want to dig into that because you had a couple of really amazing nuggets that I think people are going to find fascinating. The first thing that I wrote down that you said that I heard was you started out looking nationwide and you were looking for the perfect property. So anybody that's listening now, what I'm going to tell you is there is no such thing. It is like a bus. You miss this one, there'll be one right behind it coming along. And just like the perfect spouse or a perfect mate, there is no perfect one. We learn to love the ones that we have because we are unlovable in a lot of ways too. But the reality is that when people get over the perfection problem, the analysis paralysis, there's got to be something better. This is good, but there, what am I going to miss? The opportunity cost if I don't take action now. That's what I think is a massive stall that puts people sideways. I think the other thing you mentioned that's critically important is that there's overwhelm. Because if you look in all 50 states, you're never going to find anything because there'll always be something that you're looking for that's better. And I think the other most important thing that you mentioned was that being focused on a particular market area is extremely important because you can't know everything about everywhere. And real estate is truly a location and localized type of investment. And I think for the first and starting out, you can find good opportunities in almost any market. Now, there are some that are really difficult, some very high-priced markets like, say, San Diego or San Francisco or places where cost-effectively things don't work quite as well. But in almost any market, there are good opportunities. And my suggestions are always to keep it small, keep it localized if possible in areas where you not only know those markets somewhat, but the people in those markets. Because the other important thing that you mentioned was that in addition to me, you connected with a very competent, very well-experienced real estate agent focused on working with investors like you. And that is a critically important part of this journey, is to build your team of professionals to help you do this. And we're more than willing out there in this industry to do that. So real estate agents, mortgage lenders, business coaches, attorneys, contractors, the number goes on, but those are important things to mention. And you did all of those things rather than to try to do it on your own. And I think the other thing that a lot of people should hear is that when you leverage professionals, you not only leverage their experience, but you leverage their access, you leverage their tools, the things that they have that you don't, that can facilitate you seeing a better opportunity and finding that opportunity. So those are really important points, and I don't want to overstress them, but I think what you did was very smart. Stay where you need to be, focus it on something, don't look for perfection, and get help from professionals that can help you expedite that. Just briefly, because I want to move into the how we financed and some of the challenges, but one real quick question is just on your investment strategy, what were you thinking initially and ended up doing a long-term rental home versus maybe some other kind of option, house hacking or Airbnb or things like that? A lot of people are trying to figure out, okay, how do I dive into this industry and what do I do first? So what was your motivation, your thought on all those different options?
Yeah, from the very first, I was like, I don't know enough about rehab and things like that to do flipping at this point, right? Obviously you can learn, but I just didn't have the time. I felt like that was one step too far. That was like a second step, right? A first step was just learning how to buy properties, how to price them, all these different things. And so for me, I was originally thinking about actually house hacking. Like I mentioned, Atlanta, I was thinking about moving to Atlanta for a master's or something like that. But when those plans fell through, I was like, I don't want my deal to be dependent on me actually living in the property, because I don't know what my future is going to hold at this point. Maybe if I was a couple years down the line and I knew if I was going to stay in an area, sure. But at this moment, you know, I'm still pretty young. I don't want to be tied down to a location just because I said, I'm only going to make money from this if I house hack it, kind of thing. And so that's when I went to long-term rental, which for me felt like a safe first step where my knowledge is at, and specifically like a pretty new construction, which a lot of people have told me is not always the best deal. That may be the case on this one, may not be. However, I just knew like I didn't want the stress of having to worry about repair, having to worry about rehab, having to worry about contractors on my first deal. On my second deal, third deal, sure, now that I know all the other parts, I'm down. I want to do that. That's what I'm planning to do. I want that stress. I'm ready to go. But yeah, for this first one, I was like, I have enough stress already with just figuring out how to do this. Let's just do long-term rental and we'll keep it at that.
And I think that is also really brilliant points. In a lot of times what we'll tell our coaching clients is they're getting started is keep it simple, because it can get very complicated. And as you gain confidence, experience, then you can take advantage of some of those options like BRRRR, fixing and flipping, and opportunities that come along with that better. And you're right, because when you add a layer of complexity, just in a renovation of any sort, now you're having to go through not only all the things you already figured out, but you've got to be a contractor and you have to be an architect and you have to price all of this other stuff. And that is a huge component of what your return looks like when you have to spend money doing significant renovations and rehabs and all. So that makes great sense. And then the other thing that you really ticked off on my checklist is with new investors, especially busy ones and people that have lots of stuff going on in addition to this, you don't have time to essentially property manage and oversee construction, or don't want to, or don't feel confidence to that. And a newer construction home, in many cases, yeah, you may pay more for it, but think about it from your capital expenditures point of view. If you buy a home that's got a 25-year-old roof, you're going to have to deal with a roof replacement at some point. If you have a home that has air conditioning systems that are older, those are going to fail. Same thing with a lot of other stuff that will require. So a newer home, sometimes they come with warranties. Sometimes you don't have to worry about significant capital expenditures that you might have to put into a home early on, and it can blow your budget. So I agree with you that sometimes you have to maybe take a haircut on the return and you have to pay a little bit more for a newer home. But that does come back to pay back in spades when you're not having to replace any significant expensive pieces of equipment or part of the house early on in your investments. Good. And that is a really good point to make. I want to pivot now to your financing. You mentioned that you had some money and you had the ability to do this financially, but let's talk about how you did the financing, because I think a lot of people that are trying to figure out how to do their first deal have that concern. How much money do I need? How do I go about financing this? What makes sense? So give me a little thumbnail on that.
Sure. Yeah. When I got into it, I just jump into stuff. So I didn't really know how I was going to finance it. Fortunately, we had enough cash. So my parents helped out a little bit. We had enough cash between us that if we needed to pay in cash, we could. But I just knew not the first rule, but one of the big aphorisms in real estate is if you use leverage, you can get more returns in the long run. And that's how I wanted to do it from the very first, is get some sort of financing. But I was looking at the rates at the time. They were like almost 7% in some cases.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. One second. Yeah. Sorry, my fridge was tweaking out back there. Anyway, I was looking, it was like 7% at the time, and that just killed all the deals that I was looking at. There was no way that with a 7% interest rate, that the deal with the type of rent that we can get in this area would work. And so when I found this deal I mentioned in Katy, we reached out to them, just put an offer, or even before we put an offer, we said, like, how low can you go, whatever. And they came back and said, we can go at this price, about $267,000, and we can come back with a, if you go through our company, it was through Lennar, so they have their own mortgage company, we'll give you a 5.2% rate. And when we saw that, we're like, wait a minute, that actually might work. And so I put that into my spreadsheet and I said, yeah, this actually could work based on the comps, based on everything. Again, not counting for repairs because it's under a 1-year warranty because it's a new construction and all these different things that, yeah, this actually could work. So we went with conventional for the first one, which has its own drawbacks, was probably one of the more frustrating parts of the first deal, was the months long process of dealing with the mortgage company. And if I was to do it again, I like learning about stuff too. So I want to learn how to do like private money, hard money, whatever, all the terms out there that I know of, but I don't really know of, and that I want to know more. I definitely look into that for the next time.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I take away from that is you did a little bit of creative financing, not too crazy. A lot of people ask, how do I do this with interest rates the way they are? You just took a very interesting approach and you had the seller essentially finance your difficulty in getting financing, because rates are still high right now where we are here in April of 2025. And there are certain circumstances where deals don't work as a result of that, but you were able to make that work. And that was the reason that you're able to buy that property. And then, as you mentioned too, conventional, a lot of first-time investors, I do think conventional loans are a good way to go simply because it's the easiest loan to get. However, there are options as you get into the real estate investing side of things, as you mentioned, private money, hard money, and other kinds of financing that you can certainly take advantage of. But I do think that a lot of those lenders look for experience, and you don't have any experience until you have your first experience, and then you have experience. So now the world is your oyster and many different types of financing open up. And we can go into those things. And that's one of the things that we have a future podcast where we talk about creative financing. But for now, that's a very interesting approach, a lot of first-time investors can approach, which is new construction where they're offering some financial incentives. All right. So this is one of my favorite parts, which is, let's talk about what didn't go so well. Let's talk about what went wrong. Let's talk, because I think this all sounds so good to people listening, like, I can do this. There's got to be something here. So when does the other shoe drop? What was the biggest challenge that you faced along the way?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say I do think anyone can do it, but you have to have a certain amount of willpower. I think just the overarching thing that not necessarily was something that went wrong, but just something I didn't expect and a challenge for me, was all these kind of real estate blogs and gurus and ads make real estate investing seem like a passive sort of way to get income, but it's not. I just can't see right now when you're actually doing the deal, especially for your first deal, it is not a passive income. It took a lot of time that I wasn't expecting, dealing with the mortgage lender, dealing with the construction, actually having to come to the property multiple times. It's about an hour and a half away, so it wasn't terrible, but having to come to the property multiple times, having to do all these different things to just get the deal done was not what I expected. I thought it was going to be an easy, simple, I had the money, they gave me the loan, we're good. Obviously, I was a little bit naive, but now that I know, it's good to know. But I would say that was, for me, a challenge. Maybe for someone else who actually understands how much it takes, it wouldn't be, but I think in a lot of ways, it's not a passive income source at the beginning. As you set up your systems and stuff, which is what I'm trying to do now, I'm sure it can become way more passive. That was a big thing for me. I had to spend a lot more time than I thought it was. Maybe another big thing was, it was hard to, you know, I complained about the mortgage people, I complained about them again. It was really hard sometimes to understand what they were telling me. Not in that I don't know what the terms are saying. It's just they put numbers on their papers, on the loan estimation, on the closing cost estimation, that like we had to go through four people to even understand. where that number was coming from. And when they explained it, it was like, oh, okay. But it was so frustrating to just have to call two people, get transferred to this other person, send five emails before you get a response. That was very frustrating. And I guess just something that you deal with when going through a bigger company like Lennar. Not that Lennar was bad for that, it's just because of bureaucracy. I can imagine that if you went through like an individual seller, it might be a little bit easier, but I don't know, I haven't done it. And so that was definitely a big thing. And what I'm facing right now, actually what I was facing a couple of weeks ago, not anymore, but still right now, was I didn't factor in vacancy correct for my area. A lot of the times people just say 5% or something like that, 5%, 10%. And okay, that can work and on average, but I didn't really take into account, okay, in my area specifically, there's a lot of new construction, like flooding the market. There's a lot of people moving to Katy for sure, but it seems like the houses are almost outpacing the people moving, that my vacancy rate was almost double the amount that I'd estimated. And not only that, the rent I thought I could get was not the rent that I ended up actually listing it for. And eventually, now I do have a tenant and she's actually moving in today. That's why I'm at the property.
Right.
So to help move her in, which is great. And a huge load off my back, because that for me was like the final piece in the puzzle before it can become more passive, you could say. But that was something that I'm so glad I went through on this first deal, because now for any other deal, that's going to be such a main important point for me, is do I truly understand what this market is doing after I buy the property? Because everyone's going to tell you, the real estate agent's going to tell you, the seller's going to tell you, like, this house is going to rent for how much ever, and it's going to get rented in 10 days and you'll be good. In reality, maybe not.
That is a very important point. And we, being a real estate broker myself, I can understand that, because we're generally looking at comparables, and a lot of times we're not looking so specifically at maybe the immediate market or community and taking that into account. And then the other thing is that when you look at comparables and try to estimate things, you're looking in the past and you're not looking towards the future. And so things change. And the thing about rental properties is that they don't turn very quickly, right? A lot of the data is a year old, because tenants tend to stay for a year or longer. Estimating rental rates is extremely important. And that's one thing I coach a lot of our coaching clients about, is to get multiple comparables, not only from Zillow and from RentCast and from your agent and pull comps from the MLS, but you want things to triangulate into a point where you feel confident that your rental rate is in the right place. And I think one of the things you and I talked about was that a lot of times it's better to put your rental vacancy initially into your down payment monies, as opposed to looking at them from a cash on cash return. Because once you've got a property rented, then you should determine your cash on cash return from its rental rate moving forward. And you should probably think about the vacancy when you buy something, 30 days, 60 days, whatever that vacancy timeframe is, as an additional down payment. I'm going to be vacant. My rent's $2,000. It's going to be vacant for 2 months. That's $4,000. Don't put that into cash flow. Put that into an additional down payment or your investment initially. That way, it works better when you're buying, because if you've built that in and your numbers still work, then you get the returns you're expecting accurately, but you're also correctly estimating what your maximum purchase price should be. So that's a big tool that I use that I think changes, and a lot of coaches don't focus on that. And it's a much more accurate way to see what your return is going to look like once you're getting the income, because then you know what your market rate is and you're not dealing with vacancy, hopefully for at least a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Going to add something real quick.
Yeah, please.
I think maybe a lot of young investors will fall into the trap of, unless they listen to more experienced investors, was when my property wasn't renting. It had been a couple of weeks. I'd expected it to rent within 2 weeks, and it was not rented within 2 weeks. My first gut reaction was to say, I don't want to lower the price. I'm just going to keep it. I'm going to wait. My numbers will only work if I rent it for this much. This is what I said on my spreadsheet I'm going to rent it for. I'm not going to lower the price. But when I listen to, I talk to you about it, I listen to a lot of podcasts, all the experienced investors basically made the argument that most of the time, people don't rent a property. Probably the main factor when people are renting a property besides location is price. They might be the greatest tenants ever, but if they just can't meet the price point, they just can't meet the price point. And if you don't lower the price and you stick at that one price and it stays vacant, right? You're going to lose how much mortgage insurance every single month, right? Maybe it's $2,000 a month versus if you rent it maybe $200 lower and get a tenant and hopefully a good tenant, then sure, you might be out $200 a month, but that's way better than $2,000 a month, right? And then next year, you can raise the rates back up to market rates if possible, because hopefully maybe all the neighborhood around you, in my case, the new construction neighborhood filled out a little bit and it's not as, the supply is a little bit lower and then, okay, I can increase the rates. And if I'm really thinking on a long-term time scale, not just a year from now, but 10 years from now, then $200, $1,200 or whatever, I'm sorry, $2,400, so 200 times 12 for the first year in loss is way better, you know, is going to be a drop in the hat compared to losing $24,000 because you just didn't want to lower your rent.
Absolutely. Brilliant point. And I appreciate that because that's one of the things too that you say is, look, if you hold out for 2 months at zero for that rent, you could be out $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 of opportunity cost rent as opposed to $200. And you're absolutely right that once you start and you have the tenant in there, then you're able to start to build that back up. And you're still taking advantage of all of the other returns that you get, which is mortgage pay down or equity buildup, appreciation, and you're taking advantage of the tax benefits. A good point, and I think that's one that a lot of people need to understand, is to be flexible when you're not getting the rate that you need to move that number so that you do get a good quality tenant.
Yeah.
All right. Lessons. We've talked about the kind of things that caught you up and the good things about the property. And I want to respect your time because I know you're a busy guy and we're going towards the end of our time frame. So what I want to ask you real quick is this. What advice would you give somebody that's still on the fence of doing their first deal? And what would be that one thing that they should focus on?
Yeah. Great question. Man. Just one thing. There's so many things. Maybe one thing that we haven't talked about is, and I just want to mention, my dad was a huge help for me.
Yeah.
Such a great help. And generally, my advice would be like, don't do this alone your first time. We talked about mentors. We talked about all these other people, but find someone who's in the same stage as you. Maybe a little bit like my dad, right? He's bought a house before, but he's never invested in real estate before. He knew as little about investing as I did, right? But he knew about getting a loan, he knew about insurance, and he was really helpful on that front. So I could spend my efforts marketing the property, doing rehab down here, all these other things. And we were able to split our time up, which made it a lot more digestible. Without him, and I just want to again shout him out, that without my dad, this deal would not have happened. It would just been a way too much for me. So that's what I'd recommend. Again, it doesn't have to be your mom or dad. Just find a friend who's always been interested in real estate. I've also actually had friends who've helped me with this, right? Who are doing masters of real estate, who are doing business, bachelor's or whatever. And I just said straight up, do you want to help me with this? Take what you're learning in school and apply it to real life. And most of the time they were like, yeah, I would love to do that because they're friends with me, first of all. But second of all, they actually want to apply their knowledge into real life. That'd be probably my biggest piece of advice is honestly the people. The more people you get on your team who actually help you, the easier it's going to be, the more successful you're going to be, and the more fun you're going to have. Because just by yourself, it's not much fun trying to deal with all the different things. But if you have someone in your back corner, all the little problems don't really seem like that big a deal. And you can just kind of laugh about it in the end because you guys went through it together.
Yeah, that is really important, because one of the things I'll also tell you is that nobody likes to see somebody doing something better than them, especially if something aspired to. So there'll be a lot of naysayers out there. Oh, yeah, I heard this. And they'll come up with every horrible story that you've ever heard. This tenant that destroyed my house, this and that. And I think you've got to absolutely disassociate from anybody that's a drag and focus on people that believe the dream and can help you with it. And you mentioned it, your dad being a big inspiration and giving you that encouragement, reaching out to the real estate agent that helps you with your team, me helping on the coaching side, and working with your circle of influence and your friends that have that general knowledge, because it really is a community kind of thing. And that's one of the things that's important on our coaching program side of things, is that the people that are in that program have the opportunity to talk with and work with the people in the program. So you not only have people ahead of you helping you, but you've got people beside you that are in the same journey and the same path, walking in the same kind of place that you are, that you can bounce ideas off and get that experience. So absolutely, that's one of the most critical points, which is it's hard to do by yourself, especially the first time. You become probably much more confident, need a lot less handholding. Is not the right term. I don't mean it disingenuously, I think, but that experience, that confidence, and to have somebody else that believes in you doing this is really important. So I'm glad you pointed that out. And hopefully that's something that people take away from it. All right. So really my last question to you before we wrap up is, what's your next goal? Because I know you've got goals probably planned for the next 60 years or so with regard to real estate. Now, I know we've got a lot planned with your business and your college degree and your future hand holds on the rest of it. But you did mention a little on the real estate front, wanting to get a little bit more esoteric and taking a little bit more risk and doing some more fun things in the future. What's next for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm just going to say that I have three steps to my real estate, and I'll start from the longest goal.
Okay.
And narrow it down. I would love to have a property in all 50 states. I think that would be awesome. I just like collecting. I collect national parks. I've been all the national parks. I've been all the states and stuff. I love collecting. And it would just be a really cool thing to be able to get that far into real estate that I can say I have a property in each state. And then maybe even in each continent, maybe except for Antarctica. But anyway,
and then hard to get utilities down there going.
But yeah, exactly. So step down from that, kind of a medium term goal is I've always wanted to design my own property and see it built, and something like just so out of the ordinary and beautiful that it really makes a statement. I don't know necessarily what it is right now, but I know that's for sure something I'm going to do in my real estate career, is see something that I believe in from like a design and construction perspective be built. I just think that would be super cool. And then on the short term scale, as in like the next step, I think it would be buying a Burr property or something like that, which needs like a little bit of rehab, a little bit of renovation, most likely in Texas. Again, I'm in Texas, but now maybe in another part of Houston, maybe Dallas, where I have to stretch my skills a little bit. Okay, I feel like I have this finding deals, buying it, not perfect. You'll never be perfect. I'm still learning. But what's the next step? Okay, maybe the property is not in the best of shape. How do I get it into a good shape and then rent it? I think that would be my next step. Yeah.
I think that is definitely what we see a lot of people do, which is once you get your footing and feel comfortable on the first property, then you can take on another layer of complexity. And you mentioned Burr, which is a tremendous way to build value on the front end, because if you can buy a property that needs love and you can add that value through renovation and increase the value of the property, then it becomes a way for you to lock in the profits even better. And it does build your skill set. And it also helps you towards that goal you said in long term, which is to maybe be able to design your own property, because having that experience working with construction and all of that, the building side of it is a great way to build that experience up. And I'm just smiling as you mentioned it, because I think back to my career and very much the same kind of way, brokerage, but also then doing investments on long-term properties, then doing renovations and fix and flips. And even now to the point where we're building new construction and we're doing subdivisions and things. So it is one of those kind of gateway drugs real estate is, and you get into it and you start to find the more that you do, the more experience you get, and even transitioning into commercial properties and things like that. So the future is very bright for you, young man. And I'm just very blessed that I had some very tacit opportunity to work with you and see you very early on, because I know if I live long enough to look back and see how well you've done in the future, it's going to be tremendously inspiring. And so today's been really helpful. And what a great story you've got. So thank you so much for coming on. What I would like would be maybe if you have, it's probably difficult to do with the camera, so we won't walk around the property, but I'd love some pictures in the future I can post up.
Walk
me around real quick, and then we'll wrap this up so we don't miss out.
So we got a nice, so it's a 4-bedroom, 2-bath. This is the main kind of living area.
Yeah.
I was stationed in the kitchen back there.
Yeah.
It came with a fridge, a microwave, all that stuff. This is the main bedroom.
Yeah.
And then I just want to point out something real quick is it did not come with blinds. And so one day I came home from a trip. I had flown back into Houston from a flight somewhere. And I literally had bought blinds the day before, kept them in my car. And it was like maybe 2 a.m. in the morning. I just came to this property and installed blinds on all the windows.
And funnily enough,
I'm doing the same exact thing or a similar thing right now. I'm installing here in the garage a motor for the garage door. So I'm in the middle of that. But yeah, just
neat.
Fun stuff you get to do.
Yeah. So for those listening too, these are all really helpful things and stuff. I know that you're not going to forget about making sure we include moving forward or at least having people to help you do those things. And every deal, and I've been doing deals for over 35 years, there's always new. It's something always new that you never heard of. So that's what also makes real estate very exciting and fun is that there's always something new. This is not boring. All right, listen, it has been an amazing conversation, and thank you, Aku, for sharing your story. This is a really, truly great experience. If you've been listening and wondering if you can do this too, well, the answer is yes. So start, take action, and learn from these experiences, and you'll get closer to your first deal. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. It helps us help more aspiring investors just like you. I'm having a hard time reading today. And if you're serious about taking the first step, grab my first deal confidence kit at gregkirzner.com/kit is your step-by-step roadmap to your first deal. Remember, you're only one deal away from financial freedom. So if you're serious about taking action and making real estate work for you, tune into the Real Estate Launchpad podcast where we help new and aspiring investors take off. Hit subscribe and let's get started building your financial freedom one deal at a time. See you next time on the Real Estate Podcast. And Aku, thank you again. Good luck today. And I will be in touch and we'll talk soon. Have a great day. And thank you so much again. See you later.